Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, October 27th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, From Blossom to Bushel, Getting to the Core of Apple Breeding in the Midwest. The Midwest Apple Improvement Association is a collaborative organization dedicated to developing new apple varieties specifically suited to the region's unique growing conditions. Founded by a small group of friendly, forward-thinking farmers in the mid-1990s, MAIA now boasts more than 1,100 members committed to combining traditional and modern breeding techniques with rigorous field testing for improved outcomes. The process of developing new fruit varieties is both an art and a science. In 2009, Bill Dodd, a fourth-generation farmer who operates Hillcrest Orchards in Amherst, Ohio, assumed the role of MAIA president to champion its core mission. "Our goal is to increase per capita consumption of apples," Dodd says. "That's not an easy task, as grocery aisles are full of other competitive commodities. Ultimately, we'd like to make apples so good that people choose them as the go-to snack, even over candy, because they're so delicious and healthy." An MAIA member, test grower, and fourth-generation farmer Craig Tanner of Tanner's Orchard in the north-central Illinois community of Speer values the organization's effort to create apples with superior taste, texture, and disease resistance. "It's important for the development of new varieties to continue as consumer preferences have changed over the years and will continue to do so. The first step begins with selecting parent apple varieties that have desirable traits. These varieties are cross-pollinated to produce seeds carrying genetic material from both parents. Once the seeds are collected, they are germinated and grown into young trees. Since each seed represents a unique genetic combination, thousands of seedlings must be planted and evaluated. These trees take several years to mature before they can bear fruit, at which point Midwest Apple Improvement Association growers assess their characteristics, including taste, texture, shelf life, and resilience to diseases. Once a promising seedling is identified, it is not propagated by seed, but instead through grafting, a technique where a cutting from the desired apple tree is attached to a hardy rootstock or root system of a tree. This process ensures the resulting trees maintain the exact genetic traits of the original selection. Grafting not only speeds the production process, but also allows trees to be grown with consistent quality and adaptability to different soil types. MAIA then distributes these newly developed apple trees to orchards across the Midwest and beyond. Farmers cultivate these apples, contributing valuable feedback on their performance in various growing conditions. Dodd says the MAIA has released 8 apple varieties so far, with the most successful being MAIA-1, trademarked as Evercrisp, which is a cross between Honeycrisp and Fuji. Known for its crunch and long storage life, Evercrisp has quickly become a favorite among both consumers and growers, including Tanner and fellow MAIA member Chris Eckert, a seventh-generation apple grower in Belleville. Eckert's, the largest family-owned and operated U-Pick orchard, grows 15 apple varieties, including 5 selections developed by MAIA. In addition to Evercrisp, which Eckert says revolutionized the apple industry, Eckert's also grows the association's trademark selections of Sweet MAIA, Ludicrisp, Rosalie, and most recently planted Evercrisp-Mitchell. Plus, Eckert says his family orchard is one of the most aggressive MAIA testers, with another 20 varieties in its test plot. MAIA is one of the largest apple breeding programs in the United States, with thousands upon thousands of new seedlings in the ground today that we're evaluating. We are learning ways to speed that process up through our partners at Realty Research so that we can find tastier varieties of apples that thrive in warmer, wetter climates and are easier for growers to manage. With a commitment to innovation and sustainability, MAIA is shaping the current and future of apple cultivation in the Midwest and the country. For example, Tanner credits MAIA and specifically Dodd with encouraging the use of a tall spindle growing system, which has resulted in earlier fruit production and higher yields per acre. By working closely with growers and researchers, the MAIA ensures new apples not only meet the demands of modern consumers, but also support a thriving agricultural industry. As MAIA continues to push the boundaries of apple breeding, apple lovers can look forward to an ever-expanding selection of crisp, flavorful varieties that redefine what it means to enjoy an exceptional eating experience. Dodd says he's excited about an up-and-coming MAIA selection called Red Zeppelin. However, because apple breeding takes about 15 years, this new apple likely won't hit the marketplace for another 5 years. To learn more about the Midwest Apple Improvement Association, visit maiaapples.com. Firms eye gas rate increases. Advocates, large hikes are a troubling trend. Customers across Illinois could face increased natural gas rates next year based on proposed decisions in two proceedings before the Illinois Commerce Commission. The regulatory agency, which oversees gas utilities, is considering two requests from Nicor Gas and Ameren Illinois. A 5-member panel of commissioners appointed by Governor J.B. Pritzker will make the final decision in the cases in November. But administrative judges overseeing the cases have released proposed decisions which suggest cutting Nicor and Ameren's requests by about 1/3. Nicor, which delivers natural gas to 2.3 million customers in northern and western Illinois, asked for a $314 million rate increase in January, equivalent to about $91 per year, or a 9.2% increase for residential customers, according to the company. Ameren, which has 800,000 customers throughout downstate Illinois, asked for a $129 million increase in January, or about $100 per year, or about a 13% increase for residential customers, according to the Citizens Utility Board, a consumer watchdog group. The proposed decisions cut Nicor's request by $109 million and Ameren's by about $43 million, according to CUB. Ameren officials said the cuts bring the increase down to $5.80 per month, or about $70 per year for the typical consumer. Nicor officials said the increase under the order would be about 5-6%. Even with the proposed increase, our distribution rates remain among the lowest of any major natural gas utility in Illinois, and the total bill for an average residential customer under proposed rates continues to remain in line with the Consumer Price Index. Brad Kopel, Ameren's Senior Director of Gas Operations, defended his company's request for higher rates by saying the majority of the increased revenue will go towards safety upgrades and compliance with federally required safety testing. 50% of the pipes on our system are over 50 years old. We have to design, operate, maintain our system to provide gas service on the coldest hour of the coldest day. Ameren's rate case also includes pilot programs that could swap gas service in some areas for electric service and for an incentive program for renewable natural gas, a method of capturing methane from landfills and other sources that would otherwise be released as a pollutant. Despite proponents' claims that it can help reduce greenhouse gas emissions, some environmentalists criticize that technology for still releasing some pollutants. The gas cases have attracted significant attention from consumer advocacy groups who say the requests go too far and represent a trend of increasingly frequent rate hikes. This is part of a troubling trend being repeated, where large rate hikes are becoming the norm and consumers simply cannot keep paying the price. The most frequent target of utility criticism from consumer groups in cases like these is the return on equity, a way of calculating the profits returned to shareholders. NICOR asked regulators for a bump from 9.5% to 10.3%. Ameren's ask was similar, 9.4% to 10.7%. Most of the reductions recommended by the administrative law judges stem from lowering both companies' return on equity figures to 9.9%. Most of the overall reduction to both rate increases comes from the lower profit rates, with reductions also stemming from cuts to things like post-employment benefits. The companies always claim this is about maintenance, but at the same time they're asking for an outrageous profit rate to their shareholders. That exposes their true motivation for the rate hike requests. Abe Scar, director of the consumer advocacy group Illinois Purge, said there really is a lot more work for the commission to do beyond the cuts to profit rates. He said the commission decision is tied up into this uncertain future of gas utilities in the state. Regardless of the future and exactly the pathway, there are going to be fewer customers on the gas system using less gas. If the utilities keep spending the way they're doing, it's going to make rates even more unaffordable for more people. The ICC is weighing that question in a years-long future of gas proceeding in which advocates, utilities, and businesses are advising regulators what the natural gas industry will look like as the state approaches its deadlines for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. In the meantime, the deadline for the commission to act is November 24th in the NICOR case and December 1st in the Ameren case. And finally, from the front page, RFK Jr. allies push anti-vaccine bills. Public health safeguards on raw milk, fluoride also targeted. More than 420 bills attacking long-standing public health protections, vaccines, milk safety, and fluoride, have been introduced in state houses across the U.S. this year as part of an organized, politically savvy campaign. An Associated Press investigation found that the wave of legislation has cropped up in most states, pushed by people with close ties to Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The effort would strip away protections that have been built over a century and are integral to American lives and society. About 30 bills have been enacted or adopted in 12 states. Trump administration officials are directing activists to push this legislation in the states where public health authority rests, with the ultimate goal of changing laws and minds nationally. A spokesman for Kennedy and the Department of Health and Human Services would not comment to the AP for this story. The effort normalizes ideas fueled by the anti-vaccine movement that Kennedy has helped lead for years. His Make America Healthy Again agenda masks unproven ideas while promoting goals such as making food more natural and reducing chemicals. Meanwhile, vaccination rates continue to fall, allowing the infectious diseases measles and whooping cough to make comebacks as Kennedy has sought to broadly remake federal policies on public health matters, including fluoride and vaccines. Kennedy's allies dispute that their agenda is anti-science or driven by conspiracy theories, but many experts disagree. The march of conspiracy thinking from the margins to the mainstream now guiding public policy should be a wake-up call for all Americans, said Devin Bughardt, president and executive director of the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights, who has tracked the anti-vaccine movement for decades. People are literally going to die from it as a result. Ashley and Eric Dahlberg of Lowell, Indiana, lost their 8-year-old son, Liam, to a vaccine-preventable disease in April. I thought having the vaccines would protect our children, Eric said. Unfortunately, it did not, because other adults need to be vaccinated as well in order for it to work. Liam was particularly vulnerable because he had severe asthma and allergies. He was vaccinated against the influenza type B, or HIB, but it caused his brain to swell and killed him less than 2 days after he complained of a headache. HIB is transmitted by respiratory droplets, often spread by coughs and sneezes. Doctors said Liam's case likely stemmed from someone unvaccinated. With two other children, the Dahlbergs worry about living in one of the many U.S. communities with low immunization rates. State statistics show 1 in 5 kindergartners in their county don't meet vaccination requirements. "There's no pain that is worse than the pain of losing a child," Ashley said. "I do not and can't live through the loss of another." The Dahlbergs and others are fighting a strong movement that stresses health freedom, but disputes proven health measures. Experts say global vaccine efforts have saved more than 150 million lives since 1974. Cavities have declined dramatically since community water fluoridation began in 1945, and milk pasteurization has saved millions from foodborne illness. Despite those successes, activists spread false theories, some dating back decades, that safe vaccines injure or kill large numbers of people, that fluoride is used to poison the population, or that pasteurization makes milk less nutritious and primarily benefits the dairy industry. In its analysis of legislation, AP focused on these three public health policies, which have clear medical evidence behind them and are targets of the Make America Healthy Again movement. AP searched 2025 legislation in all 50 states, analyzing more than 1,000 bills collected by the National Conference of State Legislatures and the bill tracking software Plural for whether they undermined science-based protections for human health. Anti-vaccine bills, 350 of them, were by far the most common. They come at the issue from various angles, barring discrimination against unvaccinated people, creating the criminal offense of vaccine harm, requiring blood banks to test for evidence of vaccinations, and instituting a 48-hour vaccine waiting period. Bills in numerous places target the mRNA vaccines, which were credited with saving millions of lives during the COVID-19 pandemic. Since vaccines became more politicized during the pandemic, more extreme vaccine bills have passed. Most bills haven't passed, some died, and others are pending, but at least 26 anti-vaccine measures, including one proposed constitutional amendment and one resolution, have passed or been enacted as law in 11 states this year. Most of those bills were supported by at least one of four national groups connected to Kennedy: MAHA Action, Stand for Health Freedom, the National Vaccine Information Center, and the Weston Price Foundation. The groups also opposed dozens of science-driven bills, including one that would protect people by tightening rabies vaccine requirements for pets. There's a web of connections among the groups and Kennedy. MAHA Action has been run by people close to him, including his longtime book publisher Tony Lyons and former campaign staffer Del Bigtree. Stand for Health Freedom was co-founded by Sayer G., who now advises the group and volunteers with MAHA Action. The group Kennedy used to lead, Children's Health Defense, was a sponsor of conferences held by NVIC and Weston Price. Kennedy has been a featured speaker for both groups. When Kennedy purged the federal committee that advises on vaccines, he picked NVIC's research director as a new member. In an email to AP, NVIC leader Barbara Fisher called the federal response to the COVID-19 pandemic heavy-handed, but a wake-up call in state legislatures where lawmakers understood the danger to liberty posed by vaccine mandates in a way they had not understood it before. She said mandatory vaccination is bad for public health policy. The groups AP tracked send out alerts, organize phone campaigns, flood lawmakers' inboxes and social media, hold Zoom calls with activists nationwide, and send members to testify in state houses. Lyons said the point of the calls is to educate people. He objected to the use of the terms anti-science and conspiracy theory, saying it's just an inflammatory statement meant to get millions of people to think something bad is happening. The group's work reflects the small anti-vaccine movement's growing clout. They're really a sophisticated political operation, as opposed to just a couple of parents that don't want to vaccinate their kids. In Indiana, Republican Bruce Borders sponsored two bills at the request of the group Hoosiers for Medical Liberty. One would allow people to opt out of employer vaccine mandates. Another would require vaccine manufacturers to conduct certain safety studies. Borders said he's driven by concern about his grandson, who he believes developed autism after getting vaccinated, though there's no credible scientific evidence that's possible. He said these bills are not anti-science. I've done tons of research on this issue because of my grandson. I would say that my study on these issues would equal that of many people in the medical field. Lawmakers fighting for science-based policies say what's missing in the discussion is concern for the public good. In Indiana, Maureen Bauer said these issues are often falsely framed as parents' rights and individual freedom. If your personal decision puts others at risk, it is no longer a personal decision. You are impacting the freedom of others. And from Chicago, judge, ICE illegally detained father of teen with cancer. The United States government's detention of Ruben Maldonado, the 40-year-old Portage Park man detained by federal immigration agents while his 16-year-old daughter Ophelia is undergoing cancer treatment, is illegal and he must be given a bond hearing, a federal judge, Jeremy Daniel, ruled on Friday. Lawyers for the family petitioned the court for Maldonado to be freed as his deportation case works its way through the system. In a short order late Friday, the judge ruled that Maldonado must be given a bond hearing on or before Halloween. We're pleased that the judge ruled in our favor in determining that ICE is illegally detaining Ruben. We will now turn the fight to immigration court so we can secure Ruben's release on bond while he applies for permanent resident status. Ruben is a loving father and belongs with his family, especially his daughter Ophelia, who is battling stage 4 metastatic cancer. The separation of this family is inhumane and profoundly unjust. We are hopeful he will be returning home pending an immigration bond hearing in the coming days. Maldonado was detained at a Home Depot in Niles while his daughter was on a temporary break from cancer treatment at Lurie Children's Hospital. His attorneys argued that keeping him separated from his wife, daughter, and 4-year-old son while his deportation case works its way through the system presented a severe hardship for his family. Torres and his wife, Sandoval Hidalgo, are parents of not only Ophelia, but also a 4-year-old son, Nathan. The father, a 40-year-old painter and home renovator, is the primary breadwinner in a household with carefully balanced child care responsibilities in their Portage Park bungalow. The mother often sleeps at the hospital while he takes care of the preschooler. And from Paris, two arrested in theft of crown jewels from the Louvre. Two suspects were arrested in connection with the theft of crown jewels from Paris's Louvre Museum, justice and police officials said on Sunday, a week after the heist that stunned the world and sparked a massive manhunt. The Paris prosecutor said investigators made arrests Saturday evening, adding that one of the men taken into custody was preparing to leave the country from Paris Charles de Gaulle Airport. French media BFM TV and Le Parisien newspaper earlier reported that two suspects were arrested and taken into custody. Paris prosecutor Laurie Bacot did not confirm the number of arrests and did not say whether any jewels had been recovered. A police official who was not authorized to speak publicly about the ongoing case told the Associated Press that two men in their 30s, both known to police, were taken into custody. He said one suspect was arrested as he tried to board a plane bound for Algeria. The official added that one of the suspects was identified through DNA traces. Bacow said earlier this week that forensics experts were analyzing 150 samples at the scene. The suspects can be held in police custody up to 96 hours. Thieves took less than 8 minutes last Sunday morning to steal jewels valued at $102 million from the world's most visited museum. French officials described how the intruders used a basket lift to scale the Louvre's facade, forced open a window, and smashed display cases and fled. Hamas widened search for bodies of hostages from Cairo. Hamas expanded its search for bodies of hostages in the Gaza Strip, the Palestinian group said Sunday, a day after Egypt deployed a team of experts and heavy equipment to help retrieve them. Under the U.S. brokered ceasefire, which took effect October 10th, Hamas is expected to return the remains of all Israeli hostages as soon as possible. Israel has agreed to return 15 bodies of Palestinians for each one. Hamas has returned the remains of 15 hostages, but hasn't handed over any in 5 days. Israel has returned the bodies of 195 Palestinians, many of them unidentified. Warship USS Gravely docks near Venezuela, Trinidad and Tobago. A U.S. warship docked in Trinidad and Tobago's capital Sunday as the Trump administration boosts military pressure on neighboring Venezuela and its president Maduro. The arrival of the USS Gravely, a guided missile destroyer in the capital of the Caribbean nation, adds to aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford, which is moving closer to Venezuela. Maduro criticized the movement of the carrier as an attempt by the U.S. government to fabricate a new eternal war against his country. Trump has accused Maduro, without providing evidence, of being the leader of the organized crime gang Tren de Aragua. Boeing workers at three Midwest plants where military aircraft and weapons are developed voted Sunday to reject the company's latest contract offer to continue a strike that started almost 3 months ago. The 3,200 machinists work at plants in Mackinac, Illinois, and the Missouri cities of St. Louis and St. Charles. And from Virginia, a 24-year-old Honduran man who was fleeing federal immigration agents in Virginia died on a highway after being hit by a vehicle. Jose Rivera was headed to a gardening job on Thursday when his vehicle was pulled over by Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. And finally, from Jamaica, a strengthening Melissa grew into a Category 4 hurricane Sunday, unleashing torrential rain and threatening to cause catastrophic flooding in the northern Caribbean, including Haiti and Jamaica. The U.S. National Hurricane Center said Melissa is likely to reach the southern coast of Jamaica as a major hurricane late Monday or early Tuesday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, October 27th. Please stay tuned.